Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. We are back once again. I am your host, Dante Miles, with my co-host, Sid, and we are proud to bring to you the NL East War Report. Now, for all your podcast needs, folks, make sure you're following the Barbershare Network on Twitter and IG at Barbershare Net. Subscribe to the Barbershare Network Patreon at patreon.com/Barbershare Network. And visit the BC Net for all your pod needs. Like I said, we always got events. We always got something coming for you, man. We try to keep it as fresh and as new as possible. So make sure you stay tapped in. Sid, bro, how you doing?
Better than the Mets.
Very true. Better than
the Mets. I feel
like we're getting to a point on this show where the same way we talk about the Nationals, we may end up talking about the Mets like that before the season is over.
I can't wait.
Because like I said, I'm about to say, one thing we know, and billionaires, they have a lot of things, but patience ain't one of them. So we're going to see how this roster goes. But like as we do every week, let's kick it off. You know, updated standings. The Atlanta Braves still sitting high, first place, 51-27. The Miami Marlins, 45-34, 6.5 games back. Philadelphia Phillies, 40-37, 3 games above 500. They are 10.5 games back. Those very Mets we just spoke about, 35-43, 16 games back. And our favorite, maybe they'll be good in 10 years, team, the Washington Nationals, 30-48, 21 games back. Not much to write home about with them right now. But, yeah, bro. It's getting pretty redundant here. Hopefully, you know, we love to talk about the NL East and, you know, how it's a dog fight. Hopefully we get some fight, you know, something actually kicks up.
Right. Just like... Like you said, with the Nats, maybe they'll be good in 10 years. Like, I saw CJ went back to San Diego for the first time. I didn't get to catch that game. But at least they're putting out, like, compelling stories and giving us something to talk about while they're not as good or not – while they're non-competitive in this division. Like, at least there's something for the fans to look forward to. With the Mets, I just – it's becoming harder and harder to be a casual fan of this team. And for someone who watches every game, who doesn't miss it, like it's not becoming harder for me to watch because, like, you know, this is baseball.
Yeah.
20 years of negligence with the Wilpons. Like that's going to be what it is. But like for the people who aren't like me, I'm starting to feel bad for them because like, I think this is just who the Mets are. Like, we can't get on the same page at once. Like, starting pitching looks good, and then offense goes cold. Offense looks hot, starting pitching looks good, bullpen blows up. Bullpen blows up, we can't get a hit. So it's hard to diagnose what's going on with the Mets right now, but they did just trade for 2 young arms from the Angels system. That's not the Angels trade I was hoping for, but we did get rid of one Eduardo Escobar, who was very important to the culture of the Mets and someone who was a fan favorite. So this is the official goodbye to Eduardo Escobar. Thank you for the Fogo power. Thank you for everything you've given to the Mets. I know there was one specific thing last June, and I don't even remember why it was so, like, why it sticks in my memory so much, but Eduardo Escobar says, one day I'll give Mets fans something to be proud of. And you did it, dude. Like, contributing to Queens, contributing to the Mets. Like, people will remember his September run, like, last year. It'll be one of those like, niche fan questions. Like, who had the highest OPS in, like, the 2022 September for the Mets? And it's going to be Eduardo Escobar. And that's going to be, like, awesome to say. But, Steve Cohen, like you said, rich man who may or may not have short patience. I still don't know how to exactly diagnose who Steve Cohen is as a person, but he is addressing the media tomorrow before the third game versus the Brewers. The Mets are coming off a tough one where Justin Verlander pitched a gem, but again, the bullpen imploded. And that's one thing a lot of Mets fans knew coming into the season, that, you know, redesigning a bullpen is not easy, but it can be done. But it's a matter of having major league arms. And what the Mets have done is opted for optionability for a lot of these players. And that may not be the best strategy because there's no level of consistency in there anymore. Yeah, we It just feels like way too often the Mets are having to rely on their B team relievers, which is fine. But like Ottavino, Robertson, and I guess Brooks Raley, whatever about him, like he sucks as a person. Like those are your A guys, and then Drew Smith, who's coming back off the 10-game suspension. There's a lot going on. There's never been any consistency, and it is what it is. Max Scherzer even said it. He's like, this is a good team, just haven't had the chance to prove it. Well, this is a chance to go out and prove it. And Max Scherzer has been pitching well lately. Verlander, as Verlander tends to do, gets better throughout baseball games. Like he'll start off rocky, and then you look up and he has 10 Ks, like seven hits and no earned runs, which is weird. But I guess that's what happens when you're a high fastball power pitcher. And I have to admit, I know Justin Verlander because everyone knows Justin Verlander, but I've never like taken the time to actually watch Justin Verlander in the same way that like a lot of people have taken the time to watch Max Scherzer or Jacob deGrom or even Garrett Cole or even someone like Spencer Strider. Like he was just never in my purview, especially being an AL pitcher for most of the time. But all that to say, we are 2-5 in the last week. We are in a series right now with the Phillies, or not the Phillies, with the Brewers at 1-1. That's a 4-game set back home, and then we have a 3-game set versus San Francisco. And nice little prediction there. I don't even know if Michael Conforto and JD Davis are playing, but if they are, I promise you they will tear up Citi Field, because that's just what happens with the Mets, and that's who the Mets are this year. So enough about those scrubs.
But before we get off of the Mets, because I mean you did have a good point. You said Cohen is going to address the media, and I just wanted to ask you. You're right. We absolutely don't know his temperament personally just yet. But the reason I say that I'm going to assume that he's going to be really quick with this is just off the strength of not only has he invested a lot of money in a ball club that he just spent a lot of money to purchase, but when you try the moves that he made, they were clearly win now splash moves. And when that doesn't work, my thing is you still have, with no salary cap, I think you still have the flexibility to decide to slightly pivot. Like there's still a couple people that you could move to get some prospects in there to try to set yourself up to say, okay, we're going to build this thing, as opposed to being a team where every year is all right, let's just see who's the top free agent, spend cash. You go the Dodger route. But my thing with the Dodger route is their farm system has always backed up what they've tried to do. So, yeah, we're going to go spend the money. Yeah, we're going to make trades. But, oh, by the way, we got 5 or 6 really nice prospects in the tuck that we can sweeten the pot with. Like, so I want to see if Cohen's going to go that way, or is it just going to be, well, I'm in the market with the Yankees. I got to spend.
Right. So I think what we will see is we'll see guys. I don't want to say it's a full sell, but we know the cornerstones, oh my gosh, I can't speak today. The cornerstones of this team. Your Brandon Nimmo's, no trade clause, can't be traded. Francisco Lindor, nobody's taking on that contract. Maybe someone will trade for Scherzer. Probably not. Maybe someone will say, yeah, let's take a flyer on Verlander. Probably not. However, Starling Marte is a guy who may or may not be in uniform for the Mets by the end of the year. As we've seen with this financial muscle that the Mets have, they've taken time to let people know, like, yes, we will pay out salaries if it means getting prospects back in. That's just what they did with Eduardo Escobar. So I wouldn't be surprised if maybe David Robertson gets traded to a contender somewhere, possibly in the AL. Like maybe if like the Astros are saying like, hey, like this looks good, or maybe even like if the Mariners can get it together, or even someone like the Rangers, just this kind of like these fringe teams that are good but can do more. And then like the Pirates will be selling off. So like maybe you'll see someone like McCutchen get traded into somewhere. And with the Mets, I think some of the prime guys to be traded are Tommy Pham, who's manning left base, or not left base, Jesus Christ, left field every single day. Brett Beatty can't and won't be traded. Alvarez is staying. Narvaez might get traded. That, you know, they're just these guys who are in this middle ground of what the Mets are trying to do. And I think that what the Mets are trying to do. I think they are trying to go the Dodger route. But again, the point of Steve Cohen buying this team is to be able to compete. And to they say it all the time, is to build something consistent. And the farm system was stripped, basically, like for guys who weren't around long term. The Javi Baez trade was something that took Pete Kerr-Armstrong away from the Mets, and now he's a top 10 prospect. Jared Kelenic, killing it, was a Mets guy. Granted, the return was Edwin Diaz, but we took on the Robinson Cano contract, which handicapped the Mets for as long, like, yep. It's still handicapping the Mets. Like, they are still paying that salary, and they will be paying it until the end of this year. And then there's the famous Bobby Bonilla contract, which, like, whatever, that's like a ha-ha Mets thing. It's $1 million a year. No one cares. Like, good for you, black man. Like, get paid, yeah, bro. I love that.
I feel like at this point, that's more so to mention Madoff than to talk
about. It's Bobby. A novelty. Especially because Mets novelty.
What a lot of people don't know is that that deal is not uncommon in baseball.
Max Scherzer is getting paid $52 million by the Nats still. So, like, deferred deals, are the
future. It happens. I'm like, yeah, King Griffey Jr. is, like, last year he was the fifth highest paid player on the Cincinnati Reds.
He's the highest paid player on the Reds this year.
Yeah, like, he hasn't touched the bat in over a decade. Like, it happens. But so it's just more so a Madoff thing with the Mets. But no, I agree. Yeah. I just wanted to get your opinion on that because, like you said, you know – that he has the potential, the revenue to buy whatever he wants. But it's just more so what is his strategy going to be? And that's something that I think as we get smarter as fans, that's something that sports fans need to really look at. Who's the owner of your team? And I say that as a fan of the Chicago White Sox because it's to the point now where my expectations are reality. Like, I know what they do. Seen it for decades.
You had your six rings
plus.
With Jordan. Yeah. And you got your what, 2003?
2005.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that World Series, that 2005 run is the perfect example of what has to happen for the White Sox to win the championship. Yes. Everything has to fall perfectly. You have to have all your starters go complete games. You have to have Pruszynski get the lucky ass drop third strike that he was out. You know, you have to have all of these things break your way. Just like
the 2015 Mets. It's the 2015 Mets. Like, everything has to go right. You have to. Every pivotal moment has to be one that goes right. And that just kind of goes into what makes it so difficult to win a championship in the first place, especially in a sport like baseball where luck is heavily involved. Like, and that's fine. Like, and I think that's why me as a fan, like, am I annoyed that the Mets are bad? Sure. But I think a lot of times in baseball, it is about process over results first. And for a team that has been heavily neglected for the past 20-something years, like they let Keith Hernandez retire as a Cleveland Indian after winning a World Series with the man. That's not what a good franchise does. They let Daryl Strawberry walk away to the Dodgers and then win a World Series against your team. They let Doc and Daryl win a World Series versus the Mets. Like, that's just not what a good franchise does. And I think what Steve Cohen is trying to do, and this is getting less from the baseball perspective and more just from the experience perspective, just like, you have to honor your guys. And like, the past few years, like, we've seen Old Timers Day come back, we've seen like these retired numbers. I'd be shocked and disgusted, really, if David Wright's number wasn't retired within the next 3 to 5 years. Maybe even a Daryl Strawberry number retirement may or may not happen.
Wait, talk about Daryl's number's not retired with the Mets?
No, because it was tumultuous, to say the least.
I mean, I knew the backstory, but I still would have thought, like, just the him way and, we praised that team, wild, I would think him and Doc would have been tumultuous. Right there.
Yep.
That's crazy.
They are on the consideration panel. And one guy whose number probably won't be retired is Jose Reyes because he hit women. So there's a lot of interesting ways to look at how to take care of this franchise as a new owner. And I have to say, Steve Cohen, as a new owner, is doing his best to honor what goes on. But like, Ron Darling's number was just retired. Keith Hernandez's number was just retired last year, like, for the Mets and the Cardinals. So baseball is, I hate baseball and how they take so long to honor their guys and how much bias goes into how they honor it. But like, all things considered, I still like Steve Cohen. Like, yeah, the Mets will be the Mets. There's nothing that they've done this year that like, yeah, there's nothing they haven't done this year that like I've been like, ah, oh, this is the last straw, like,
right,
whatever. Yeah, like yeah. Some people time, say bro. It. It's not. It's not me. I know what I signed up for.
Yeah, I feel you. And you know, a few minutes ago we mentioned luck, and so with that, you know, we're gonna get into the team that went to the World Series last year, the Philadelphia Phillies. You know, they did. You know, what we always see in baseball, where that one team gets hot, you know, toward the end of the season, they ride that into the wild card, and they just ride that right into the playoffs.
Yep.
You know, fortunately, this season hasn't been as smooth a transition. They're 3-3 this, the past week. And of course, when we say the past week, we're talking Sunday to Sunday. 3-3 in the last week. And they have some series, some very winnable series coming up. You got 3 against the Chicago Cubs, who have been inconsistent, and 3 against, you know, the bottom feeding your division, Washington. But what I wanted to ask you about the Phillies, I understand, you know, you're starting third baseman tore his ACL at the beginning of the season, so he's out, he's done. So do you stand pat and, you know, I don't want to say chalk the season up because there's still a long season left, or do you go out and make a move to try to really compete, to position yourself to grab one of those wild card spots? You may not catch the Braves, but may have, you know, right, the potential to catch a wild card, grab a wild card spot. So if you were in Philadelphia, what would your mentality be going into this, essentially the All-Star break? Because the All-Star break is only, what, 2 weeks away?
Bye, baby, bye. Like, you bye. I think they've just set off way too many, like, they've spent a lot of money. Like, yeah. And my favorite thing to tell people is it's not my money, so I don't particularly care how money gets spent as long as it gets spent. And it's spent in the right way, or it's spent in a way that feels not stupid. And the Phillies have spent money in a way that feels not stupid. And they just did it last year. Like they did it last year. Arguably, their hitting has gotten better, I guess, on paper, probably not on actual stats, because I'm not looking at Philly stats either, because I refuse to. Everything I've learned about the Phillies is against my will. But yeah, no, I think they buy. And I don't want to be that guy, but like, the Angels suck. Go get Mike Trout. Like, go get him. He's a South Jersey guy. Like, he loves Philly. He loves the Eagles. Go get Mike Trout. Like, do something that indicates, like, hey, like, we're making big moves, and like, and make sure nobody else can get Mike Trout, because when the Angels decide to sell off, someone's gonna want Mike Trout. And whether it be, you know, his production has obviously gone down, but when your production goes down from injuries or whatever, when you're the best player in baseball, that means you're now the fifth best player in baseball,
right? Exactly. And
it's like, top five is probably like Shohei, Mookie, Judge, Bryce or Freddie, and then Mike Trout. Like, some that combination of five somewhere, somehow.
I would have put Acuna in there, but I feel you. Like you said, it's in there.
I mean, I agree. Like, I think he's the best player in baseball, the second best player in baseball this year. But, you know, like that. So, something. Right. Something to that effect for a guy like Mike Trout. So, and he's best friends with Bryce Harper. Trey Turner is starting to heat up. Like, yeah, dude, you buy. And their problems seem fixable, as most problems is. Like, their bullpen isn't terrible. Ranger Suarez has been up and down this year. Wheeler is Zach Wheeler. Like, he's when he's on, he's a Cy Young looking guy. When he's bad, he's given up 7 like soft contact hits and getting nickeled and dimed. And then Aaron Nola, some days he's good, some days he's bad. He can be good at home, he can be bad on the road. But like, I think you end up buying with the Phillies, and because of it, like, they've done it. Like, they know what it takes to be in that position. And even like a guy like Bryce Harper, like, that's someone who inspires fire in people.
Yeah.
So when you have Bryce Harper coming back from from Tommy John surgery in 150 something days. Reward him. Make him feel like you came back for a reason and you buy. And I don't know what the Phillies farm system looks like, because again, everything I know about the Phillies is against my will. But you know, I think they'll be fine. I think they'll get a wild card spot somehow, some way. Like, I'm never convinced of any other wild card spot beside, like, the Reds are the Reds are the NL Central. They'll win the NL Central, and they'll have a sweet wild card run, and they'll be fun, and they'll get knocked out in like the second round by like the
Braves. Yeah.
That'll be fine.
Yeah, I agree. I think Philadelphia, you know, I posed the question, but at the same time, I do agree. I think that you can't panic and knock yourself off of the plan that you've already put yourself on. Because one thing we saw with their owner, you know, adding Bryce, adding Trey, he's willing to spend, but he's also trying to make this, you know, extend this window, this championship window, as long as he possibly can. You got Kyle Schwarber, you know, one of the best left-hand power bats behind the best left-hand power bat in Bryce, you know. So you already have two pieces that a lot of teams have been or are always searching for. I know there's plenty of teams out there who are, you know, begging for left-handed power. You got plenty of that. And so I wanted to say this because, and this has nothing to do with the NL East, but you brought up Bryce, not Bryce, I'm sorry, you brought up Mike. So I thought about it. I don't think if you're the A's ownership, you can afford to trade Mike Trout.
I don't think so either.
Simply because
what you're trading Shohei Ohtani. Right.
No, so Shohei's gone.
What product do you trot out there?
But here's why. If you know Shohei's gone, if you get rid of Mike, first of all, you're already in a volatile situation because you're the, you know, Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim. But that fan base is going to turn on that ownership group if you trade Mike Trout.
Have they not already, though?
Like, they haven't. I mean, don't get me wrong. At this point, they're still more so, hey, we just the A's and what it is. Like, they go after players, and you can't say it's a lack of aggression, because they're always trying to spend the money. They spent on guys that have not contributed.
Rendon. And, just say his name. Like, they bought Anthony Rendon. Just say, because that. Ooh. That. Like,
but that, I think with Rendon, that's one of those things where it's a really roll of the dice when you pay a guy after a hot playoff run.
The playoff run is what got him the contract.
It wasn't years of consistent greatness. So it's like, okay, let's throw all this money at him. It's like, okay, we can never field a good team. This guy just went crazy in the World Series. All right, let's pay him what he wants to pay. And so with that, I feel like if you say, okay, guys, I know you talking to your fans, obviously. You've watched me pay all these people who haven't done shit. Now I'm about to not pay the greatest baseball player we've ever fucking seen. Yeah. Right. No, like you can't do that. And then, oh yeah, by the way, we're gonna trade the one we already had on the team.
Yeah, we have the two best baseball players to play in this generation, and we're getting rid of both of them.
They might burn that damn stadium down if they try to trade Mike Trout. Like, so I hear what you're saying, and it is interesting, because if I'm Philly, I'm all in on it. I'm like, hey, no, we want to bring you back to the East Coast. It makes perfect sense. It would be so much fun.
I would hate it, but it would be so much like getting Mike Trout on East Coast timing. Oh my, that'd be the league has wanted this for so long of watching Acuna, a DeGrom day, a Harvey day. It would be must-see. Bryce Harper or Mike Trout being the protection for Bryce Harper. And then
insanity.
And then the protection for Mike Trout being Castellanos or Schwarber. What?
And we haven't even met Castellanos. He's the best hitter on the team right now. And we haven't even mentioned
him
yet.
That's gross. That's
disgusting. The thing. But no, bro, I looked up his stats. Like, this year, he's surprisingly doing extremely well.
That's
like,
why I-95 fell apart. Right. Like, he's doing well.
He's hitting .313. On-base percentage is .359, which leads the team. He's hitting .313, bro.
That doesn't sound right.
Slugging .490. Like, no, he's playing well, but he only has 9 home runs. He has 44 RBIs. He has 23 doubles. Like, he's playing really well. So if you add pieces like that, you know, so this could quickly go from a team that's a consistent wild card threat to actually, you know, what they want to be, and they'll be in the mix for the division. I understand, you know, the Mets took a lot of that steam out of their train when we saw the signings that they did with Cohen, but you still have the pieces to where you can take this team and make it an even better team. But like I said, if I'm the A's, you would have to literally give me Bryce Harper to get Mike Trout. That's how ridiculous my demands would be. Because it's like, I know if I trade this guy, we might as well try to relocate this team, because they're going to fucking flip. Flip.
And then he's, what, 6 or 7 years into that 13-year contract?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And like you said, outside of, you know, he has his injuries, but it's still Mike Trout is better than 95%
like
of the league.
He could be like Nelson Cruz, DH for the rest of his career, and be like a top five DH. Like,
oh, he's
going to
be a monster. He's going like to be a monster as a DH. Like,
yeah, like he's hurting himself fielding. You put him on the Bryce Harper program, and just say, figure it out.
Do him like Juan Carlo, who can't stay healthy to save his life. But say, all right, bro, we're going to put you in bubble wrap. You're just a DH.
Right.
And now you go from having one of the best center fielders in the game and one of the best DHs. So that's an interesting situation.
Right. Like, they're such an interesting team to me, because, like, third place in the NL East is such a prime space to be, because, like, you can go up, you can drop, but, like, it's never over when you're the third place team in the NL. Like, it will never be over. And that's just because of how volatile, like, everyone else in the division can be. Like, we have a Cy Young pitcher in Miami who looks terrible right now. Mm-hmm. But, like, we have a rookie who looks fantastic right now. So, like, the volatility of this division is so it's almost Shakespearean, but, like, it's so ugly. But, like, I love it and hate it at the same time.
it can definitely be anxiety inducing when you sit here and try to watch these teams. But
fucking Braves fan.
We say that, but and I'll get into that too. But it can be that for them as well. But last two teams in the division is good, because they actually are about to face off with each other. You know, we finally get another matchup of the top two teams in the division. It hasn't been much of a fight so far this year. Of course, I'm talking about the Braves and the Marlins. So far this year, the Atlanta Braves are 6-1 against Miami. So I know we've teased and talked about, you know, potential playoff matchups and things like that. But I really think that this is no sweat. You know, any nervousness from the Braves side. So for me, you spoke about Eury Pérez, who had another great start on Sunday, 6 innings pitch, 4 hits, 9 strikeouts. You're waiting on your Cy Young winner to really come around. But coming into this series, you got through with Boston first, so that's more so a little tune-up. You know, I know they're last place in the AL East, but you know that division is the only division in baseball that has
everyone above 500, right?
Not only above 500, but every team has a positive run differential. So they're no slouch.
I hate that ESPN took run differential off, like, the standings. It's like, it's such a pain in the ass to have to find now. And, like, it's fine because, like, 6 of my 7, like my 12 tabs open at any given time are baseball things. But, like, the convenience of it all is so annoying.
Yeah, no. And so you have a team that you're going to play off, but then you come home and you face Miami. So if you're the Marlins, coming in on the road, headed in the All-Star break, like I said, you're 1-6 against this team that you could potentially be facing in the playoffs. What would a series win mean for the Marlins going into to finish off the week?
Well, I think that, one, if you can reestablish Sandy Alcantara, you know, that's a feel good. Like, you always want your best pitchers to feel good, and you always want your best pitchers to feel like they can dissect lineups. And I think just, you know, when you're a second place team and you beat a first place team, that kind of just puts the picture a little bit more in place for you. You look at it and you say, okay, I think we can actually do this now. Like, maybe you can't match the power of Atlanta, but I think you can match the pitching of Atlanta. And I do think that you can kind of go tit for tat with them and kind of like nickel and diming, because, you know, you have a guy like Spencer Strider who, disclosed, is my favorite pitcher in the NL East right now, and probably my favorite pitcher in the league besides, you know, that one guy, Tungsten Armor Doyle, out in Anaheim. but yeah, like he's my favorite pitcher. But you know, soft contact can like beat Spencer Strider because he throws so hard and because he's such a strikeout heavy guy, and he's even on record saying like he hates double play balls, which he'll probably have to learn sooner or later that those are a pitcher's best friend. And you know, but I think when it comes down to it, it just feels like getting the monkey off your back, or kind of like it's not David versus Goliath yet. Like it's not the same territory as like, all right, this is two 98 win teams going in a 3-game set, and yeah, one of them is gonna win the division based off this game, a la mm-hmm. Mets and Braves last year. So it's not David versus Goliath yet, but it's a nice little tune up for David to be like, ah, okay, so that's how you throw a punch. Like it's kind of like a nice little sparring session where they're both in the gym at the same time, and one team comes over to watch the other team and see how they do things, and there's kind of just this mutual respect between the two, and it's not an ugly fight yet, but it's gonna get to a place to where it's like that, especially if the Marlins win this series in a convincing fashion.
Yeah, and it would have to be convincing for me. That's really my thing with this entire series. And I say that because when I say, you know, like I said, Atlanta is 6-1 against the Marlins this
year. That's dominance.
Look at the scores. It was 11-0, 7-4, 6-4. Okay, those are good games. You lost the one game the Braves did lose was 5-4. But then you come back, you beat them 6-0, you beat them 14-6, and then you beat them 6-3. You know, all of this
feeds into, and it's like you said last week, 6 runs may or may not beat the Braves,
like, which is insane to say, but it's like,
but yeah, that's just the truth of the matter. It's such a good combination of power bats and guys who just get on base and knowing situational baseball, and it's the veteran leadership of not only the staff but the guys they brought in consistently. Like it's guys who may not have gotten it done for their franchises before, but they're guys who can get it done. Like, and that's just what you need to one, win baseball games, two, win baseball games consistently, and three, win a division. And when you do that, well, you're putting yourself in the best chance, your best chance possible to win a World Series. And that's what the Braves have done for the past 3 years, put themselves in the best position possible to win a World Series. And it's hard to imagine someone taking that crown from them. Like even as a Mets fan, as a true to this, not new to this Mets fan, like every year, no matter what, it feels like when you fight your big brother. I don't know if you have siblings. I have 9 of them. I have a big brother. We fight all the time. I've beaten him in a fight once in my life. And that, like, he might go on record and say, like, no, our parents split us up. So, like, I don't even necessarily think I won. I just wasn't the one on the ground when they said, all right, that's enough. So, like, did I win? Yes. Was it a convincing win? No, it was a win by decision. So, like, that's just kind of how it feels with this division. Like, it's the Braves and then everyone else. And then the everyone else is, well, who just happens to be there this year, who can say, like, hey, we're gonna compete. And then the Braves say, well, I fucking hope you can, because we're bored. And they're not bored, but like, yeah, they're bored. Like it's not a challenge anymore. It's
fun because, like you said, even with all of this happening, just like last year, they lost to the Phillies in the first round. So, you know, it can turn in a heartbeat. But I think what we need to speak about, and what we've talked about it off and on, the reason you see them here and everybody else seemingly here has been that offense. And just, you know, a quick few numbers coming into Monday, they were first in OPS at 825 as a team. The team OPS is 825. First in slugging as a team.
Real.
First in slugging as a team at 484. They have hit 139 home runs. Oh, and by the way, as a team, they're second in batting average at 271. So it's like you said, they're literally doing everything at an elite level. And you've seen that consistently. Now, last year, the one difference I will say this year, and when you see these numbers, it's like, damn, it's because some of their best players haven't been able to heat up yet. You know, Austin Riley started to heat up. Michael Harris has started to heat up, but those guys got off to slow starts. And I remember last season, there was a time where you can go to a Braves game and look at the lineup on the scoreboard, and everybody's OPS was like 775 or higher. Everybody. So, like, this is a team that prides themselves on playing good defense, hitting the ball out of the ballpark. When I talked to Ron Washington, what he always said, he says, hey, man, you got to hit the ball out of the ballpark if you want to win games. That as much as people love to talk about small ball and doing things the right way, at the end of the day, this team does two things extremely well. They hit the ball out of the ballpark, and their best pitchers strike people out. It's power on both ends.
What more can you ask for?
Exactly.
For your best, like, for a playoff run, you need one really good pitcher, a decent pitcher who can win you a game two, or a wild card series. You know, one really good pitcher, a guy who can win you a game two, and then a guy who will not lose you a game three. Yeah. Like, that sounds weird, but like,
I know exactly what you need. That one clutch start. It's like, you don't have to be a superstar guy. You need a
like
Ty
Charlie
Walker.
Morton is that guy.
Yeah, like, yeah, he should be. Charlie's been a little shaky, but he should be that guy. Yeah, right. And it's funny,
that third guy. Or like,
and I'm glad you mentioned the
Chris
starters.
Bassitt was that guy. Like,
right.
Just someone who is going to eat innings, protect your bullpen, and not let the game get out of hand. And it seems like the Braves pitching from three to five or six or however many people they run in the rotation, they are guys who will not lose them games, which is the complete opposite of, well, the Mets.
Yeah. So, and that pitching staff has been, you know, like I gave the offensive stats here, the defense, pitching, they've been, you know, ninth in ERA.
Okay.
They're 12th in average against, is 243. And, the one area of concern, because you mentioned the one really dominant pitcher, they're 18th as a staff in innings pitched. So that goes back to more so what we talked about the first episode, where we said we may see them go out and make a move for a starter. Because when you do have an offense that's this dominant, like you said, at the end of the day, when you get down to the playoffs, at some point you're going to need your pitchers to step up. It's not going to always be, okay, you can go out there and give up five runs and we're going to go get eight. Sometimes you're going to need
somebody to lock in. That's a bad formula. Like, that's a terrible formula.
I don't care how good your offense is. That's never the precedent you want to set in baseball.
Yeah, relying on your offense to save your pitching is bad. No. Like, that's bad process. That's bad fundies. Like, that's bad fundamentals. Yeah. Like, you can't do that. Otherwise, you're going to find yourself sitting at home. And that's why the Braves found themselves sitting at home last year.
Yeah.
So I would hope they take into this lesson and be like, hey, this is, you know, this is like the difference maker, and they go out and get themselves a pitcher, which would be good. And I'm interested to see who they bring in, because what the Braves tend to do is they not only find ways to upgrade, but they find ways to elevate the guys that they already have as well. And to help those guys become more competitive and help those guys make sure they can do things that eventually translate to winning baseball. And I'm not sure there's another team in the league who can get production like that besides like the Rays, from guys they consistently bring in or bring up or anything like that.
Yeah. They've got, you know,
yeah.
Yeah, I agree. Cause you know, you got a guy like Elder who's come up and stepped up for you. He's 5-1 this season. He's going tonight. And I wanted to get a chance to really, the probable pitchers for either side, Miami or the Braves, haven't been set yet. You know, the Braves really go, well, most teams, they go, you know, series by series before they let you know who's going.
Right.
So, and for me, if I'm the Braves, this is a early foot on your neck moment. This is one of those, yes, I'm going to let you know, I don't care who's hitting 400. I don't care if you do catch a wild card. We're going to kick your ass every time we step on this field together, and there's nothing you can do about it. So, if I'm the Braves, obviously, it's way too early to call any series in baseball must win, but I want to continue to set that tone against my division rival. And I'm going to, like I said, I'm going to kick your ass every time we step on this field.
And honestly, like, you don't think the Braves as a whole are looking at Ronald Acuna and being like, no, this guy is the MVP. And you don't think the Marlins are looking at Luis Arias and saying, nah, this guy is the MVP. So we got to go out there and make the other guy look like they're not the MVP. Like, it's, you know, it's not a definitive anything because it's almost July. Like, maybe baseball will start mattering soon, like, for the guys who are bad and the guys who are good. Like, right now, like, I'm still not completely sold on the Mets, but, like, it's getting to that point. So, like, yeah. You know, but the Braves are, you know, I think because of, like, the type of camaraderie that they have and, you know, kind of just, like, the how consistent and how long that staff has been together. Like, they're looking at this matchup, and it's something they may or may not have circled on their calendar. It may or may not be something that Acuña is thinking about. Like, I don't think Ronald Acuña will ever come out and say, like, yeah, I'm thinking about an MVP. Or actually, he might. Ronald Acuña doesn't really care what people think, which is awesome.
And I love that, man. I fucking love it. Like,
he's so great. Bro, I love
telling you, like, when you go down to the field and they're taking BP, Ronnie's just in his own fucking world, bro. He's like, legit, he's somebody you can tell he loves this game. It's not something where he's doing it for the check. Like, I know people always talk about, well, he signed that team-friendly deal. It was terrible. It does look very horrible in hindsight.
And that's just racism.
But that next deal is going to be crazy.
Yeah. He has an opt. It might not be an opt-out, but it's like a
knowing the Braves, he has probably like a club option. Yeah. It's a club option.
Something like that. Like, something like that. That'll.
Because what they'll normally do is, like, they'll put a club option at the end that'll give you a decent chunk of money. Mm-hmm. As like, a, well, thank you for doing that. But his next deal, there will be no discount. I guarantee.
Yeah, there is a discount. Well, we saw what happened when they asked someone to take a discount and he ain't want to. So yeah.
And he cries about it and reminds us every time he steps back in the stadium. So we don't want to see that with Ronnie, bro, at all. This is gonna be a great series, bro.
I have such thoughts about Freddie Freeman. Congrats to Freddie Freeman for getting hit 2000. Right. Like, I have so many negative things I want to say about Freddie Freeman. Like,
he's the second one this year, right?
Yes.
Kutch got 2,000. Yes, Kutch last got 2,000.
So, do you know who are on the, like, active 2,000 hits list?
Damn,
there's going to be one name on there. You're like, what the fuck are you talking about?
Because, like, obviously we have those two. Cabrera. Yep. 2,000 hits. Trout's not there yet, is he? Yep. Trout's like, he's played like 1,800, some shit like
He'll
that.
He'll probably hit it at some point this year, next year. Yeah.
Damn. How many do we have total that are active on that 2,000 hit list? It can't be that. It can't be more than a handful.
We have six.
Damn, six. Okay, so we named
six
three.
Going on seven.
Oh, shit. Because I knew Kutch coming into the season was close. Yep. Fuck. Go ahead and name the other four, bro.
Miguel Cabrera at one with 3,121.
Yeah.
Joey Votto with 2,098. Nelson Cruz. Yep. Nelson Cruz with 2,049. I'm going to skip four real quick because
that's a surprise.
You're not going to believe it. You're just not. Five is Andrew McCutchen with 2,009. Shout out to Mac Miller. Freddie Freeman at six with 2,000 down pat. And then upcoming, Jose Altuve. At 1,961. Damn. And so I'm going to give you one last guess on who that four spot is.
It's not Goldschmidt. It's not Arenado.
Nope.
I'm trying to think of people who got some time. It's not Bryce.
Daniel Murphy is absurdly high on this list. He's 19th. I don't know if I like that.
Can you give me a team? Does that give it away?
It kind of gives it away. Oh, okay. You're going to be mad too.
What team is he on?
He played for the Chicago White Sox.
Get the fuck out of here. Don't wait. It's not who I think it is.
It probably is.
He's a second baseman?
He is a second baseman. Kind of.
Who is it, bro? Like,
it's Elvis Andres with, you know, like, 2,036 hits.
I should have known that because he got it and everybody was making a big deal out of it. And I was like, you got to be fucking kidding me. Like,
that doesn't sound right.
This is what my franchise is coming to. Like, journeyman.
fucking Elvis Andres.
That is a surprise. I watched the game when he got the hit, bro. That's the wildest part. And I'm sitting there like, who the hell is he talking about? Man, what a guy. That is quite the list, bro.
That sucks.
Yeah, no, definitely, bro. That's insane.
Oh,
that is insane.
But talk to me about the war board, bro. What are we looking at?
As usual, our third war board. We got four new entries this week.
Really? So, okay.
Yeah. At number 10, we got Matt Olson. His war is currently at 2. Number 9, we got his teammate Spencer Strouder. These both are new entries, also at 2. Up 2 spots from last week, we got a Met in the building. Brandon Nemo, he's at 2.1.
Yes, sir.
Down 4 spots, maybe coming back to reality a little bit. My boy Orlando Arcia at 2.1. At 6, it's another shortstop in our division, Francisco Lindor, 2.3. You know, Frankie gets a lot of hate, but you mean the guy's good, man.
He's the player he is, and people like the Mets fans in particular overreact to like cold slumps or hot slumps. But when he like at nothing, like if nothing else, he's a Gold Glove shortstop, and like he'll be he's an all-star, and he probably leads like if for categories on extra base hits and everything like that. Probably up there in homers for shortstop. So like Francisco Lindor is the player he is. Love him to death. Like he's great. One of my favorite players in the league to watch.
Yeah. Number 5, he's up 2 spots from last week. He's been steady in the list. He's made it every week though. Jameer Candelario for the Nationals. Yeah, 2.4.
I'm so interested to see where he goes.
Yeah, he's definitely getting traded.
100%. Yeah, he's not going to stay on the net. Like it wouldn't make sense for him to stay on the Nats. Like that's a waste.
Yeah. 100%. Down 2 spots. Luis Arraez, he's 2.7. Up 1 spot, Sean Murphy, he's at 3. War of 3. Second, he's a new entry. He made it all the way to number 2. Zach Wheeler, his war is 3.2.
He must have had like 3 really good outings.
Yeah, he had to. Like I said, it shocked the shit out of me because, like you said, he has been nowhere to be found our first 2 weeks. But then when I checked it, there he was. And number 1, holding steady, probably going to be there all season.
Right.
Ronnie Acuña Jr., 3.9. And on his way to possibly his first National League MVP award, which I think would be much deserved.
Yeah. Dude, he should. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Like definitely. I'm here for it. Love it. Acuña's great. Love him.
Yeah, it's really nothing else you can say. It's one of those things where it's like, just yep, you got it.
Yeah, like I don't even think personally I think it's silly when people talk to him about being a polarizing player because no, he's not. Like
he's not. A guy that sits there and loves the game. Like it's insanity.
And I hate to stand on the soapbox as a Mets fan, but like so much of what people have said is just like, oh, he doesn't play the game the right way. He doesn't want to run out doubles. Like, bro. Do you see the product? Like, see what this man is doing? Like, and it brings me back to a couple of years ago. Maybe it was 2021. It was like, I think it was like Bryce Harper. Like someone was like heckling him and he was like, yeah, you're better than Acuña. And then it's just Bryce Harper in the dugout. Acuña, like talking about like it's just so much respect for like across the league. And like, how can you not love, like, I think I say this often. I don't think I've said it on the podcast yet, but like, how can you not be romantic about baseball? It's relationships. It's like reality TV, but for like, guys who don't have emotions except for when baseball is going on. Like I love it.
Exactly, man. You can switch, like, it's one of the best sports in the game. But that's all we got for y'all this week, man. Thank you once again for tuning in with us. Like I said last week, all my Nationals fans, if you want to hear us talk more about the Nationals, you got any questions, anything you want us to get more in depth about, just hit us up on the socials. Let us know, man. Follow me at October Zone Tay. Follow my boy Sid at Sid Sly Park. Yes, sir. Make sure you are following the Barber's Chair Network on Twitter and IG. It is at Barber's Chair Net. Subscribe to the Barber's Chair Network Patreon at patreon.com/Barber's Chair Network. And make sure you visit the bcnet.com. That's all we got for you this week. See you later.